Dan Celia.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning morality with truth.
Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call up, now's the best time to do it. You know, I just want to make it clear to everybody, and I say this, you know, I get 13, 14. It's really about 1,500 and some odd on average emails a day. And what I didn't say, and I failed to say, and it's important to note, you would understand I obviously don't answer the vast majority of those emails. And I just want to be truthful about that. And if you ask a question, financial question, there is no one that answers those but me. And I generally I don't answer them all. I'm not going to say I generally don't. I never do. I can't. I just can't. And, you know, it's summertime, so I'm not traveling as much, thankfully. But when I do go away, if I am traveling, you just think about it. Now I'm 3,000 emails. And then I'm away for 2 days. You know, now, you know, it goes on and on. So, and by the end of the week, it's nothing for me on a week's vacation to be 10,000 behind. And I'll tell you what I do. I click on a mass delete and I delete. I have to. I mean, I'm not trying to sound, but that's why we have phones and our phone lines are open. So when you have questions, if you want to get an answer and you're emailing me, the odds of you getting an answer, are very, very slim. And our emails are broken down by partner. So I know when we get an email, if someone's a partner or not, somehow that, I don't think Pat does that. I think it does it automatically, but we know that. And, but nonetheless, it is, and I look at those first, but still I don't get to them. And I don't want to make it sound like I do because I just don't. And if some of you have emailed me and have emailed me 3 weeks ago and waiting for an answer, you're probably not going to get one. I know that's horrible to say. Most people wouldn't say that, but I'm just trying to be honest with you. But it's so easy to get an answer by calling in. Oh, so you got to hold a little bit. But think about how long you've been waiting for an answer for the email. So I apologize. I wish there was a day, let me tell you, I remember a day when I was on the air that I used to answer questions off the air. In other words, at the end of the program, if the board was filled, I would finish it off. And I would take all the questions off the air and, you know, to try to help people. And I would answer all the emails. You know, I probably got, you know, 50 emails, maybe 30 emails a day or something. And I wish I could do it because it's something that I love to do, but I just can't explain to you. You know, the kind of days that I have, and one of the problems I have, which, you know, it's not nobody's fault, but so I start my day at 2:30 every morning. I very seldom go later than that. I mean, Friday mornings are probably my late day because I know I can and I'll sleep in maybe another half an hour and get up at 3:15. Because of Rapid Fire Friday, I tend not to get as stressed over having enough information. But that's so you can imagine. By 2:30 in the afternoon, 3:00 in the afternoon, I've already got my 12 hours in, you know. And so I go brain dead at night. I stay up. I don't sleep. I'm up. I try to do a couple of things that I can, but I'm answering questions is not something that I'm doing in the evening. And so if you get an email from me, it's usually I'm going to say 4:00, 4 to 5:30, because it's one of the last things I do. I do, you know, obviously I do my study and my devotions, and then I do then I get right into the international world of things, and then I get to the U.S. world of things, and then I may take a break and breeze through a few emails and then do some other things. So that's my everyday. So just so you have an idea of what to expect. 844-707-5533. Right now, we shouldn't have any emails because we don't have anybody on the phone. So I'm going to assume that nobody's got any questions about anything. It's a beautiful thing. So we will get to the questions on the phone in about 3 minutes or so when we get back off the Ag Report. But I do have a question from Jim watching on Facebook. He says, I know FedEx is not on your list. FedEx, I wish, was on my list. FedEx is not biblically responsible. So they're not on my list. Great company. Love the management. Love what they've done. I think they're a well-oiled machine. I follow them and I track them. I have for 20 years. And I still follow them and track them. So it is something that I follow, but they are not on my list. So Jim says, did their earnings report last night affect your model of where the economy is going? No, it did not at all. Didn't even enter in to any of the factors. When we get finished with the Ag Report, I'll come back, I'll tell you why, but it didn't even enter into it. And because it was an anomaly, it was, you know, their concerns are all due to trade with China and the sanctions against their technology companies, Huawei and others. And it is an anomaly that they're going through. It is not an indication of the economy. All right, here comes Craig Haggart with our Ag Report. Then we'll be right back. We're staying with phones for another hour and 45 minutes right after this. We'll be right back.
This is Craig Haggart with your Financial Issues Ag Update. Corn prices were firm yesterday after the USDA cut the crop condition rating to 56% good to excellent. That was down from the previous week's 59%. Corn planting and the final progress report of the year is estimated at 96% complete, and that has the average trade guessing that 86.7 million acres of corn are going to end up getting planted this year. Of course, that's down from the June USDA report, which was pegging it at 89.8 million acres planted. Ultimately, that should be a little positive to the markets, but in the overnight trade, as I record this, spot corn futures are trading a penny and a half lower. Yesterday saw soybeans trade higher initially as they were buoyed by planting delays and subpar crop ratings, but they were unable to hold the gains and succumbed to selling pressure. A portion of that pressure stemmed from a lack of confidence that a meeting between President Trump and the Chinese president will produce any meaningful dialogue or progress. In the overnight trade, spot soybean futures continue to sink and are trading down 4 cents as I record this. The wheat markets traded mixed yesterday, with winter wheat lower and spring wheat higher. The hard red winter wheat harvest remains well behind normal as combines battle wet field conditions. In the overnight trade, Chicago and Kansas City are 1.5 cents lower, while Minneapolis is trading down a penny. Cotton finished a bit stronger on Monday, with December futures up 3 points to settle at 65.72. In the overnight trade, as I record this, the spot futures are trading up an additional 55 points. Livestock futures probably offered a little more good than bad yesterday. August live cattle futures were 82.5 cents higher, but August feeder cattle finished the session down 45 cents. A couple of sharply lower closes in lean hogs the past couple of days were reversed yesterday, as we saw the August lean hogs turn a little bit of a kind of minor turnaround maybe, as they closed up $1.95 per hundredweight for the day. Class 3 milk futures were a touch softer, with July futures closing down 4 points as they settle at 17.04. In cash markets, choice beef boxes were down a dime to settle at $2.19.64, while selects were 86 cents lower for the day as they settle out at $1.98.95. In hogs, pork carcass values finished $1.75 lower as they closed out the day at $75.58 per hundredweight. This has been Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. We're going to get to your calls. We've got a full board, so we'll get to those. Before I do that, let me just finish up. I was talking to, I lost the name here. Who was it? Jim from Facebook. He was on Facebook, and he indicated, was asking me about FedEx, and I said, look, no, the earnings reports is going to have no impact on what I do later in my conference call and any kind of strategies. That was an anomaly. One of the biggest issues with FedEx, which is going to hold true and will be the same for UPS as well, another great indicator. But when we look at that, you know, this is all about trade. This is an anomaly about trade and sanctions. It's really not about a whole lot of other things. You know, you've got China punishing FedEx just because they happen to be an American company. That's number one. But, you know, FedEx does a lot of business with the communists in communist China. And I get that and I understand it. And, you know, so it hurts them a little bit. But the fact of the matter is they do not have the ability, as you can imagine, they're not wired for this, to be checking every single package for some electronic microchip that is not supposed to be going to China or coming out of China. They don't have the abilities to do that, the capabilities to do that, and it's caused huge problems. So that's one of the reasons. And looking forward, they don't see an end to that. There's so much uncertainty. So I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to it at this point. I'm going to wait until, you know, later on in the next few weeks and see if we can get a better feel, which I know we will from FedEx, UPS, and we'll watch that closely. Neither one of those companies on my buy list, but they are a wonderful gauge of, you know, what's going on. Now, strictly from an economic perspective, one of the other great gauges is international paper, and we watch that very closely, because without international paper exists and grows primarily because of the Postal Service, FedEx, UPS, and other shipping. I mean, you know, they're the largest commodity producer of cardboard in the world. So we watch all those things, obviously, but sometimes they're very key factors, Jim, and sometimes they're a little bit, they're just not a factor at all, and this is one of those times they're not a factor at all. All right, let me go to Patty. Patty's calling us from Indiana. Hey, Patty.
Hello, Dan.
Good morning.
Hey, yesterday or the day before, I was listening to the program. Hey, I appreciate so much the ministry. I have to start out saying that.
Thank
you. I just love how you help us understand macroeconomics. That is just such a blessing.
Mm. Thank you for saying that. That's an encouragement. Thank you.
Okay. So yesterday or the day before, I was listening to the program, and I don't remember the lady's name, but she was she had sold some property and had a chunk of money, and you advised her to put it into a brokerage account and to use a Ginnie Mae fund that you have on the buy list.
Yes.
And so I'm kind of somewhat in that same position. Back in April, I pulled a lot of money out of some target funds that I had, and just because I was just so disgusted with the whole target fund thing.
Uh-huh.
And so I have it sitting in a federal money market, and I was wondering if I might take your advice and apply it to myself and use that Ginnie Mae fund.
Yes.
While I'm trying to develop my income portfolio.
Yeah, I think it's a fine thing to do. It's C20 on my list, C20. And yeah, I mean, I think it's a great idea. I wouldn't do it with all of it, but, you know, I think it's a good idea. So I know it is, I just use, you know, I mean, I've had it for a very, very long time, but it's what I use in my IRA for parking cash. And it's what I use in the institutional money the private money that I still manage, which is a couple hundred million. So I use that fund C20. I use that as the place that I am going to park money if it's longer than I'm going to say 9 months to a year. In my case, in my IRA, I've had money in there for probably 15 years that I've never moved out. Probably not the wisest thing, but nonetheless. Only because I could have done better with some of that money. But, you know, it's never going to go down. It would be almost impossible to lose money on it because I started reinvesting dividends with it. I just let the dividends ride in there. So now it's just got so much gain from the anywhere from 1.5% to 2.25%, or almost 3% 1 year. Last year, I think it was 3% or close to it. It just doesn't move that much. So it's always in the green, but I think it's a great place, but I don't want you to use it like you would use that federal money market account. In other words, one thing is certain about that federal money market account. If you put $100 in 3 months from now, it's still going to be $100. And you're not going to gain much, but you're still going to have the $100. So the C20 fund that I'm talking about is not one that you are going in and out of. In other words, you're trading out of it. Well, today I'm going to buy 200 shares of XYZ company, and you're going to use that money in C20, and then you're going to, you know, maybe put it back another time, and you're going to use it as kind of your cash flow for your trading account. It really isn't that. It is that 10, 15, up to 20%, depending on your age group, kind of cash that you're going to keep for an extended period of time. But the money that you trade from, that should be in just a money market account.
Okay. All right. Well, then I have another question, okay, too, about the Timothy plan.
Okay.
I haven't seen Timothy plans on the buy list. Are the ones that you're recommending the ETF in the income portfolio, would they have to be on the buy list, or can I just jump into those now?
Well, they are on the buy list. So, but yes, they would. I would want you to treat them like anything else. And I would want them to be on the buy list. Now, they are on the buy list now, but there are some Timothy funds that are not on the buy list. There is one that people are going to find very odd, so I'm going to have to explain it before I take it off the buy list. So I'm going to do that probably an alert. There's another one that's going to come off, but there are a couple that are not on the buy list, but they are. But yes, you would treat them the same way.
When you say the buy list, are you talking about the broad list?
No. I'm talking about the actual buy list.
Oh, okay.
So
I must have missed that then.
Yeah, so if you go to, you know how you click and go to the commentary buy list section?
Yeah.
And if you scroll down, you have that big, long buy list. They should be on that list.
Oh, so if they're on that list, you can buy from it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If it's when you scroll down and there's that long list, that's everything. I don't even know what it is. I have no idea. I'm going to say it's 60, maybe not that many, 40 different positions. But yes, that's the buy list. You know, the little things up in the commentary section, they're just things that either get added to the buy list that week or come off the buy list that week. But you have to scroll down further to see the complete buy list. Yes.
Okay, so what do you mean when you refer to the broad list?
The broad list is when you click on and you go to, you can actually go to different sectors of the broad list, and that is everything. That's made up of about 230 different positions. They're the things that I'm doing analytical work on to try to decide whether it's going to get to the buy list or not. That's my list that I work with. So
I thought that those small the thing that said on buy list, on sell list. I thought that was what I had to choose from.
No.
I didn't understand.
No, they're the things that I'm only adding this week or taking off this week.
Okay.
The buy list keeps scrolling. Right. It's on the same page. You just got to scroll down a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
All right.
Okay. I'm on the same page now.
Okay.
Right,
good.
So
good.
Much, Dan, the Lord bless your day.
Thank you, Patty. I appreciate it. So, folks, if you're a partner or you become a partner, please, I have a special video now that I had to do because people were driving her crazy. But if you go to the commentary section, if you don't do anything else, frankly, I'll tell you what I should do. And I'm going to contemplate this. I should make it mandatory. In other words, you can't become a partner until you watch this video. I'm serious. I think I may do that because it's such a key component to the strategy. And basically the video, it's about 3 or 4 minutes long. And it basically is me telling you, please, please, please don't ever put anything into your portfolio that is not on the buy list. It is a very important rule, and you never buy anything off the buy. I don't care how much you like it. If you are committed to following our strategy, don't buy anything off the broad list. It's not what it's for. And I've threatened several times to just take the broad list off altogether. But then I get all the emails and people panic because they don't want me to do that. But so it's key that you only buy off the buy. Now, the exception to that rule is say you have a stock that you own. You've had it for a long time. Maybe you've only had it for a month. And you want to add to it because it is down. And you want to add to it? Doesn't have to be on the buy list. You own it. You can do that at your discretion anytime you want. If you're dollar cost averaging down and you're buying more shares of something you own, then that's fine. It doesn't have to be on the buy list. The buy list is for new money that you're putting to work, that you're putting into your portfolio. All right, we've got a lot of calls. We're going to get to those phones right after this. 844-707-5533. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. We're going to go right to phones. Let me get to Lynn. Lynn's calling us from Oregon. Hey, Lynn.
Good morning, Dan. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
I have a question that hopefully will help me and maybe others as well.
Okay.
I know that we hang on to stocks if they're income producing, and that's our goal, is to have more income rather than growth.
Yes.
However, I'm kind of in that area where I'm moving out of the growth and into the income. And so I have stocks I've had for a while, or maybe not. But the question is, when do you sell them? I hear some people call in and they'll say, well, I'm going to sell mine. I'm up 10%. Other people, oh, I had 100% growth and I sell it. And so I don't really know when to pull the trigger on that. It seems buying is a lot easier than selling.
It is. It really is. So here's a good thing to remember. If a stock that you're contemplating selling, and let's say, you know, you've had it for a few years or, you know, as long, whatever, and it's up maybe, you know, overall 10 or 15, 20% or whatever it might be, and you're thinking you want to sell it, you can never, in my opinion, you can't go wrong by selling it. You know, it's never a bad idea to take what is profit only on paper and put that profit in your pocket, so to speak. It's never a bad idea to do that. Now, there are thousands, the vast majority of financial analysts that would probably argue my point on that. The reason they would argue with me on that is because they have been conditioned that you keep things that are up in your portfolio because it makes the whole portfolio look better, and people tend to be off my back, my clients calling me, because they look at their overall portfolio and they're still up because of those really good positions. So they're kind of conditioned to think like that. I manage a institutional account, one of the university annuity pools that I manage. They say 3-4 times, every 7-8 years, I hear it, usually when a new board member comes in, they say, well, you know, why did we start the year up so much and we're down this year by 10%? I'm just making numbers up. And I say, well, we're not. You need to look not at the bottom line and the percentage that we're down. You need to look at how much money we have. So take out any deposits. And at the end of the year, when we were up 30% or whatever it was, we had, you know, $18 million. Now we've got $21 million, but we're down. No, we're down from a percentage perspective on the investments that we have, but we have more money because I sold off a lot of positions that were up significantly. So do we really care whether we're up, or do we care that we have more money this year than we did last year? And, you know, I have to condition them about that, because that's not how they're conditioned to look at things. So we have, that's why I say, yes, people will sell off. I sold off all my positions, and here I am 6 months later, and I'm down on my portfolio. I was up doing so well. Are you really, though? Look at your money. Look at the amount that you have. Do you have more than you had, you know, before you started selling all those things off? I would submit to you that you probably do. So, oh, yeah, I see that. Okay, that makes sense. All right, I get it. You know, I mean, it just, but there's a conditioning there. So you can't go wrong by selling off your profits. Now, I don't think that particularly if it is a foundational stock, those ones that are highlighted in yellow, I'm saying, look, don't sell. Why? Don't sell them. Just keep them in there, because they will be a cornerstone. They may not be the first 2-3 years, but eventually they will be the cornerstone of your portfolio that is just giving you a good, secure feeling and keeping things together, because they're going to be those good old steady, strong companies and consistent. They're not setting the world on fire. They're not going to grow through the roof, but they're just strong, and they're going to stay strong. So it's always good to, you know, keep some of those. So I don't think I would never sell a stock merely to take profit that was only up, you know, 8% or something. I probably wouldn't do that, or wouldn't recommend that. I'd probably tell you to wait. And let me just say this, Lynn, you probably have heard me say on a conference call, but that strategy of taking profits has only been a strategy about 4 times of mine in the last 30 years. It's not something that is something that I employ on a very regular basis. It really isn't. I did it January a year ago. It turned out to be a very, very good thing, as the Lord would have it, that we made that call and changed that strategy. When I did it, I said, it's probably going to be 6 months to a year. I don't know if you were a partner there or remember that. But when I did it, I said, I don't know. I may stop this in 6 months. But I have a sneaky suspicion, when I did that in January, I said, a couple years ago, I said, I think it's probably going to go to the first quarter of next year. Well, here we are, we're still in it. But So it's not something that is a regular, consistent strategy moving forward for somebody that is, you know, going to be doing this for the next 30 years. But again, even if it's not part of the strategy, you can't go wrong by doing it. Now, that probably doesn't help you much. But
well, it's still kind of vague, but it does.
Yeah. So all I would say to you is you can do this. You can pick a number and you can say, you know, something's up 20%, I'm selling it.
Okay.
And just get into that mode, or say, I'm only going to sell what I need. I'm going to let things ride out because I'm a long-term investor. And when you're a long-term investor, in other words, you're building a portfolio for the next 20 years or whatever it is long-term, the chances are you're not going to have to experience the ride down. You will have a ride down, but you will never participate in it because you're a long-term investor, meaning you're not going to sell out or have to sell out. So it is going to ride back up again, and probably when it comes up, it's going to come up stronger. They 98% of the time do. So you're not going to have to experience a loss. If you've got 3 years and you say in 2 or 3 years, I want my whole portfolio to be an income portfolio and I need to start liquidating some of the growth, then to me, it becomes somewhat of a no-brainer. Take that growth stock that's up 25% and sell out of it. Because your goal is to build that income portfolio. May take you a couple years to do it, but now you don't have the benefit of time to ride it back down and wait for it to come back up again, because you want to start turning it over into an income portfolio. So do it while you can now if you're trying to build that income portfolio.
Can I ask you about one specific
company? Sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. IN25. That one has had a nice run, and so I am up in it. Does that have more room to run? I guess that's always my question.
Sure.
Do I sell now, or does it have a little bit more? Should I keep going? Because it has done pretty well.
Is it is this one of the stocks that you would want to to include the money from it into an income portfolio?
Eventually, I don't have an income stock that I, you know, want to immediately get into necessarily. It's just, is this one, is it a good time to sell this one, or is it going to have some more growth in the next, say, 6 months to a year?
You said IN25, right?
Yes.
And you're up?
Yes.
I would sell it.
I'm up 41%.
I would definitely sell it.
Okay.
I would definitely sell it. I mean, some of the run-up in this stock is based on a couple of things that there is still a possibility might not happen from a merger perspective. If it doesn't happen, and it looked like there for a minute that it wasn't, it's kind of back on the table again, it could be, you know, pretty devastating. If it does happen, the long-term outlook's going to stay good. But I'm up 41% in the stock. I would sell out for sure.
Hey, that's perfect. Thank you so much. I sure appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Thanks, Lynn. I appreciate your partnership. God bless.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
We don't have time to get to Richard. You're on deck, brother. So we'll get right back to phones right after the short break. It's a short break. We've got a line open, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call, now's a good time to do it. We got a line open. We got another hour and 15 minutes left. So stay with us. Put your questions up. Financial issues. We're here to help you be the best steward you can be with all that God has given you, and give you a greater understanding of how to do that. We'll be right back.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. Let me go back to phones. Before I do that, let me just mention this because it's kind of funny. But we're changing out, we've got some new bumpers that we've made and some changes we're making on a couple of, well, not a couple, one old bumper that is an opening, a first hour opening. And so yesterday, I think it was yesterday, it wasn't Monday, maybe it was Monday, but yesterday, you know how we do that opening where we have a piece of the preamble that's coming in. So that was scheduled to be one of the things that we're changing, and we took that out. But we don't have the new openers in yet, but that part of it came out. And people are emailing me saying, oh no, you were, you know, the only place we heard that. I know it's been on a long time, but we need to hear, you know. So I'm getting some emails about that. And I got an email from a guy that I've met several times at town hall meetings. I think he might be from Alabama, and I'm sorry if I'm wrong about that. But so he is a guy that has always encouraged me about anything that I've ever said or done in reference to the Constitution, because he said we're just not hearing enough about that anymore. And so he hasn't emailed me yet, and I'm shocked. But I suspect I'll hear from him as well. So just some changes that we're doing, and that's all. It just, we're trying to line up some graphics and do some things. I don't even understand it, to be honest with you. I just go along with whatever between the graphic guys and the producers tell me that I need to do. So anyway, so you don't have to email me about that, by the way. Just giving you a heads up. Let me go to Richard. Richard's calling from Virginia. Hey, Richard.
Hey, good morning, Dan. It sure is great to talk with you.
Thank you.
You make it such a big difference in a lot of people's lives.
Oh, thank
Every
you.
Morning, I'm East Coast, 9 o'clock.
Thank you.
We wait for your voice. My question is on a defined benefit pension that I have with my most recent employer.
Okay.
The company that I retired from was acquired by another. These are aerospace companies.
Okay.
And so my company, a mixture of aerospace and commercial, was acquired by a large aerospace company. And they, that company, which was much larger than my company, they acquired, of course, these liabilities, defined benefit liabilities.
Yes.
And they immediately, within 6 months, began calling the pension an annuity and began pension began to be serviced by a large insurance company.
Yes.
Now, my question is, did they do this to avoid ERISA regulations, or did they, preferring maybe to be regulated as an insurance product under this insurance company? And hence, I presume annuities are regulated by state regulatory boards.
Correct.
Not now, ERISA.
Correct. They're regulated by the state insurance commissioner.
Right. So that makes me feel good.
They did it for two reasons. First of all, I give them credit for changing it and calling it what it is, because most companies don't do that. But the vast majority of companies are doing the exact same thing, but they never say that because they think it's going to have a bad connotation to it, or they want to sound like to some of the older employees that, you know, oh, no, we still have our pension plan, because they don't want anybody to panic. So I give him a lot of credit for calling it what it is. I wish everybody would do that. But because 98%, I'm saying, will turn them over to insurance companies. For the other reason is they don't want the liability. It is far better for them to get the liability off their books and get the liability off of you, the pensioners, because now what happened, if that, you know, I know the company that you're talking about because I'm familiar with the area and the buyout. So the odds of that company going out of business are slim to none. It's probably not going to happen. But if it did, there would be no question. It wouldn't even be an issue if of you potentially losing any of that, whatever that income will be from that or whatever that'll look like. There wouldn't be any risk of that. It's not even counted in. It's totally separate out of any kind of IRA, 401k, pension fund that the company may have. So it's really a good thing for people. And again, the vast majority of companies do that at some point in time. They turn it over to. I wish there were other companies like unions. I wish they would do it, which they hesitate because that poor money can have benefits to them. But mm-hmm. to the bosses.
Right.
So it's a good thing. So yes, it's an insurance product. It's an insurance annuity. It will become an immediate annuity when you retire. Are you retired yet or you're still working?
No, not from that company. I have my own business.
Okay. So
and I'm 70.
Gotcha.
Or 70 in, on Monday.
Yeah.
And,
do you receive income from it?
Yes,
yeah.
I can make the company make money when we need. My wife and I can make it make money when we need to.
Right, right. No, I mean from your pension. Are you receiving that income?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's a substantial amount of money.
Yeah.
I was the company that I retired from got out of the defined benefit,
yes.
went into defined contribution,
yeah.
and I was grandfathered.
Yes, right.
I had enough years of service, so I was grandfathered.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. And so that's a great thing. You're in great shape. That's why they're calling it what it is. It is an insurance annuity. You know, if that insurance company went bankrupt, some people would say to me, well, the risk is suppose the insurance company doesn't make it. That's on the state insurance commission. The state insurance commission takes that book of business under that annuity on the insurance company, and they just divvy it out amongst all the other insurance companies in the state. And they say, you know, they don't get a choice to take it. They say, you got to take it and you got to pay this much. You know, you
right.
got to take
right.
some of this. You got to take, you know, and they, and it's protected that way. So it's a good thing.
Right. Do you suspect that the other retirees of the company that acquired my company are probably under the same system so that?
Oh, they definitely are. They definitely are.
The insurance company the insurance company bought the assets.
Well,
I presume.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but more like the company sold the assets to the insurance company.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. The insurance company, the company probably did pretty well by turning those assets over, selling those. And they probably had a bidding war, you know, big major insurance companies came in. And they bid for it. So, you know, New York Life and a Metropolitan and a Prudential and all these big insurance companies probably came in and bid to the company for that pool of money.
Right. They like that business. In general, they like that business, the insurance companies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They like that business. Yep.
Yeah, they
okay.
do. Yeah. It's
okay.
Very good for them. Yep.
Okay. Dan, thank you so much. You are a great blessing.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate you saying
that. Thanks,
keep listening.
Thank you very much.
All right. God bless.
You bet I will, Dan.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. 844-707-5533. We do have a line open. 844-707-5533. And I hope that you will cue your call up. We've got a lot of questions, too, on Facebook and other things that we'll get to on our website as people watch live or listen that way on our website. So we'll get to all of those as well. 844-707-5533. By the way, all the indices are about where they were the last time I talked to them an hour ago. They're just hanging around there. They're in positive territory. That's good news. The Dow's down. It's only up a quarter of 1%. It's up. So it was up as much as 0.75%. So it is down off its session highs. But the only thing that's going to matter is the end of the day, and we'll see what happens. Not a lot of news coming out. One thing I did want to talk about, which I never got to, but I'm going to get to it when we get off this break, is oil. So EIA numbers should be out, so hopefully I'll get a hold of those. I was going to report on the API numbers where crude inventories dropped dramatically. But having said that, let me just say this, it's kind of irrelevant because demand has dropped so much that, you know, between production cuts coming out of OPEC and production cuts coming out of the U.S. We have had production cuts, by the way. We don't talk much about that. We don't hear much about it. But we have seen, I won't know this week until Friday, but when they put out the report, but we have watched oil rigs online drop. So they have cut. Last week it was 11 rigs, but over the last 5 weeks, we probably have had, and I'm guessing at this number, 50, maybe 60 oil rigs come offline. So we have cut production as well. But all of this is adding a great balance to the oil sector and a good balance to gasoline prices. No, not good. We'd all like it to be cheaper. Anyway, I hope you have a wonderful day. If you've got to leave us, remember, all that you have is His. Let's be found a good and faithful steward. Have a great day. God.